You're listening to Upon Further Review, presented by Coors Light on the official Raiders Podcast Network. Here's your host, Eddie Pascal.
Raider Nation, what is going on? Eddie Pascal and producer Jim here in Henderson, Nevada, feeling good, feeling strong, feeling excited for another episode of Upon Further Review, brought to you by our friends at Coors Light and the Silver and Black. Your Las Vegas Raiders are 1-0. And magic to my ears. It is just, it's what we needed in these trying times to start off the season in a big way with a road win, something that is very, very, very hard to do in the NFL. But we have a good show today. We're going to talk a little Saints. Well, actually, we're going to talk a lot of Saints, talk a little bit of Panthers, but mostly focus on the task at hand, and that is Drew Brees and the boys coming to town Monday night to break in the brand new, beautiful Allegiant Stadium. And in just a second, we're going to welcome in our guest for the week, the great friend of the program, a big pal of ours, one of the best dudes on this team, and the reigning special teams player of the week, Daniel Carlson, the man who went, he went too hard on that 54-yard field goal. And we're going to obviously talk to him about the 54-yard field goal. We're going to talk to him about his number change, everything that has gone into 2020 for the kicker for the Las Vegas Raiders. But before we do that, we begin, as we always do, it's a tradition like no other, shout out to Jim Nance, with our transactions. And this week, guys, kind of surprising, just a single transaction, but a transaction nonetheless, as just the other day, I'm looking at my notes, on September 15th, the Silver and Black added cornerback Nevin Lawson to the 53-man roster, waiving Dallin Leavitt in a corresponding move. So for those of you who don't remember, Nevin was suspended for week one. Obviously, that suspension has been served and he is back. But to clear a space for him on the active roster, the team did have to waive Dallin Leavitt. But let us move in, before we welcome in the cash money man himself, Daniel Carlson, get into our headlines. And we have a lot to get to, so we're just going to go rapid fire down the old checklist here. So, Silver and Black win 34-30, week one. Carolina, Josh Jacobs was a beast. DC was efficient as ever. The defense showed up in the biggest moment, so give them credit for that. But I think collectively we would like to see a little more pass rush, a little more consistency going forward. But I'm going to just keep preaching what I've been preaching. Guys, it was 1 week. This defense is going to get better. You look at the talent on that defense compared to a year ago, they will be better. And they would be well served to start that new and improved play this Monday night against Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. But it was a great way to start the season. As I said at the top just a second ago, it was really the perfect way for the 2020 Las Vegas Raiders to get their campaign underway. You go into a place that is, in the Eastern time zone, and historically speaking, that has not been an easy place. When you play in that early time slot, that 10 a.m. time slot, it has not been an easy time for teams traveling from the West to go play and play well. And the Raiders did just that. They did enough to win, and was it the prettiest win we've ever seen? Absolutely not. Was it a perfect start to week one in terms of the execution and all that? There's always room for improvement, but at the end of the day, John Gruden, Derek Carr, and the rest of the fellas got on a plane. Shout out to Engineer Jim, too, who was with them. Got on a plane and flew back to the entertainment capital of the world 1-0. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is all that matters. So we now put the game behind us. It was a great game. It was a beautiful moment in time. As an old friend of ours used to say, it was a good first chapter. But now it's time to turn the page to Chapter 2 of 2020. And Chapter 2 features a Hall of Famer, one of the best to ever do it, one of the most dynamic, exciting offensive players in the NFL, Drew Brees, coming to town. But in terms of what we're actually going to see on Monday night, or I guess here is a better way to describe this, is we actually got some really exciting news just the other day. And that news is that Coach Tom Flores, who is, as we all know, up for the Hall of Fame this year again. You hear me, Hall of Fame, again. He's up for the Hall of Fame for, the third or the fourth time, but I digress. Anyways, Coach Flores, who was a part of the radio broadcast for the Silver and Black for many, many years, is going to be back in the booth Monday night with the current broadcast team to broadcast the game on our airwaves. And that is just so cool. We're going to hear from Kyle Martin, the great KMM, at the back end of the show. And he actually had a chance to talk to Coach Flores the other day, kind of getting his thoughts and talking about what it's going to mean to him to be able to break in that new beautiful building in the broadcast booth. And my bias is very, very apparent. I've been very open about my respect, my admiration, my just general fondness for Coach Flores. So the fact that he is going to be in the booth on Monday night for the first home game for the Las Vegas Raiders is a really, really cool deal. So I would implore all of you guys that are able, watch the game on Monday night, absolutely, but stick some headphones in or throw it on your speaker or on your phone or whatever and listen to Coach do his thing with the rest of the broadcast team. Speaking of Hall of Famers, or I should say folks that should be in the Hall of Fame, our very own Charles Woodson in perhaps the most unsurprising news of 2020. 2020 has been a year of a lot of surprises, right? I think that I don't know if there's anyone who collectively thought that this is the moment we would be living in. There's been a lot of things that have gone screwy. There's a lot of things that have caught us off guard. But the fact that Charles Woodson has now officially been named one of the 15 modern era finalists for the Hall of Fame should be ranking number 1 million on things that have surprised us this year. I mean, truthfully, between you and I, between the friends of the program, this truthfully seems like a formality, right? I mean, I would be absolutely shocked, bamboozled, hoodwinked, whatever word you want to use, if C. Wood does not get into the Hall of Fame. But, on his first effort, or first attempt. We all know he's getting the Hall of Fame at some point. But really, this is just the next step for C. Wood in getting to that moment for him. As I said, one of the 15 modern era finalists. And typically, there's no set number of guys that are going to get in each class, but the bylaws of the Hall of Fame state that between 4 and 8 total new members will go in. Coach Flores is the lone senior member of the Hall of Fame, senior nominee, I should say, for the Hall of Fame this year. But C. Wood and Coach Flores should find out their fate. If I'm looking at my notes again correctly, the night before the Super Bowl, so call that February 6th. I want to say I'm doing my math wrong and squinting at the calendar with one eye as I try to record. But yeah, C. Wood, first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, to ever do it at the defensive back position. A long time coming. I've joked with Charles before where I said, hey man, like the moment that you're eligible, like I hope that it is a very, very short conversation in terms of the case for Charles Woodson getting into Canton. And I tweeted that earlier, and I really do hope it's about a 2-minute conversation where they look at his name, they read the stats over for formalities purposes, and we get a unanimous aye, and C. Wood ends up in the Hall of Fame where he belongs and gets that beautiful jacket and gets enshrined there in Canton as the hopefully one of the 2 newest Raiders in the Hall of Fame next year. But Charles was very comfortable under the lights, and I had a chance to watch C. Wood for a couple years during his second tour of duty in Silver and Black, and it really did feel like the bigger the moment, the brighter the stage, you know, primetime national TV game, that was when C. Wood was at his best. And if these Raiders want to come home or stay home with a win week 2, they're going to have to do that, be at their best, and take care of Drew Brees and company. Drew Brees and the boys coming in 1-0, taking down Tom Brady in week 1. And it is going to be a good game, a really, really exciting game. There are no lack of storylines headed into week 2 action, and I cannot wait. Obviously, I wish all of you were going to be there with us, getting a chance to watch this game live and in person, but as we all know, no fans at Allegiant Stadium, as heartbroken as I know so many of you are out there, not getting a chance to be there for that inaugural year here in Vegas. But an incredible game. Kickoff scheduled for 5:15 on ESPN. Make sure you tune into that. I can't imagine there's going to be any of you that are going to be busy at that time of the day. It is appointment viewing, folks. It is going to be a lot of fun. Derek Carr, Josh Jacobs, Drew Brees, Alvin Kamara. We get to see old friend Jared Cook, too. So there is, like I said, there is a lot to be excited about Monday night, including, segue alert, the Killers will be performing at halftime. That news came out earlier today as we record this on Wednesday the 16th, that the Killers will actually be playing a little set during halftime. The Killers, obviously Las Vegas legends, and kicking this thing off the right way, man. And it is going to be so much fun. I know it's going to be, it's not the week two that we imagine. It's not the home opener that we were all thinking we were going to experience, in January or February. But it is what it is. We're making the most of our circumstances. We're doing our best to stay positive, to look for the little things that'll make us smile during the day. And the fact that we are playing real football and your Las Vegas Raiders are going to be on primetime in just a few nights is pretty, pretty cool. And I know, like I said, you will all be there with us in spirit. I'm sure we will feel your energy, your passion, all that from wherever you are watching. But make no mistake about it, we are very excited for fans to get back into the building when it is safe and we can all do so in a way that keeps all of us healthy. But it's about that time. As I said, our guest this week, a man who is one of our favorite dudes. I know I say that about a lot of guys, but he really is. Daniel Carlson, coming off of an incredible week one performance. If you wanted to, you know, draw up what week one was going to look like for the Cash Money Man, I don't know if you could have drawn it up any better than what he delivered on Sunday at Bank of America Stadium. Perfect on his PATs, perfect on his field goals, including a 54-yarder, a career high. And really, man, he was just nails, man. He was absolutely perfect. He was exactly what they needed him to be. And really, he looked like the Daniel Carlson of old. I know that the Daniel Carlson we saw in 2019, he had his moments 100%, but there were moments that I know he would like back. But this was reminiscent of the confident swag lord Carlson we saw when he descended into Oakland in 2018. And I am really, really excited to see what the rest of the season brings for him. So without any further ado, Engineer Jim, get that beautiful, beautiful audio dialed up and play our full interview with Daniel Carlson. And we are joined by the reigning AFC Special Teams Player of the Week and friend of the program, Daniel Carlson. Daniel, congrats, man. This is Special Teams Player of the Week award number 2, I believe, for you as a Raider.
Yep. It's a good one. You know, it's always an honor. There's a lot of great players in the league and stuff. And So this is good. But more importantly, we got the win, and we're looking forward to week two now.
Absolutely. So do you get like a plaque or something like when you win this? Like, do you get like a little like a pin? I don't know, something.
Yeah, I think different teams do different things. I know the NFL, they'll send us out like it's like a certificate, I would call it. Just like a little paper with it. But, you know, it's great, and it's obviously a team effort and stuff. So. Proud. I'll enjoy it a little bit, but obviously we got some more work to do. So looking ahead to that as well.
Absolutely. So is this something that like Rich tells you, or like what's the logistical stuff of you finding out that you win the award?
I really woke up with a couple texts saying congrats, and then as I went in, you know, I checked my Instagram, whatever it was. But Gruden came up to me, Rich came up to me, guys, you know, been coming up to me throughout the day as well and just congratulating me. But like I said, team effort, couldn't have done it without the snap, hold, the blockers, everything like that. You know, the offense, defense setting me up in positions to, you know, get some important extra points, get some important field goals. And so it was exciting start of the season, and hopefully we'll continue with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up the other guys. You brought up the field goal. Obviously, we're going to want to talk about the 54-yarder. But in terms of the battery of you, Trent, and AJ now, just having another year under your belt, just being able to have the familiarity between the three of you in what has been an offseason, a season, a year of madness. I mean, how valuable was that for you headed into week one?
Yeah, it's huge, you know, with no preseason, with no form of OTAs, really. To kind of have that familiarity with those guys and have the experience the whole season together with those guys. And then me and Trent, you know, have been almost 2 seasons now where we were able to get together in the off season some during COVID, be smart about it, work safely on high school fields and stuff in preparation for week one and the rest of the season. And, you know, see that pay off and stuff early on has been great. But, you know, it's huge to have that, because it's tough for rookies coming in, it's tough for new guys coming into a team that, you know, you don't really have a lot of time to get to know guys and get comfortable with those guys. But having that experience with Trent, AJ, and, you know, the offensive line, stuff like that, has been huge to us.
How weird was it kicking in an empty stadium on Sunday?
Yeah, that was strange. A little different for everybody, you know, just when you score a touchdown, when you make a kick, whatever it was, you don't have that roar of the crowd. You don't have people booing you the whole time you're out there on an away game, stuff like that. So it was definitely unique, but it was kind of cool to have the team kind of have to pump each other up and kind of have to, you know, encourage each other and kind of be the crowd noise for each other. As the defense is out there, you know, you had offensive guys and special teams guys just yelling and, you know, cheering those guys to make a big stop, make a big play, get off the field. Offense is going, you know, you have defensive guys locking in and cheering for those guys as well. So I thought that was really unique and, you know, nothing we've ever really experienced before. But as a team, I think we handled it great and we'll continue to handle it great.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you fly back to Vegas with a win in tow, obviously the most important thing. But when you go out there for a kick, it's obviously, you know, your first kick of the season, your first kick since, gosh, what is it, December, early January of last year. What do you hear? Because, I mean, you're so, like you said, you're so used to hearing the roar of the crowd, whether it's rooting for you or rooting against you. Like, what do you hear then now in this new COVID football?
Yeah, and I think, you know, kickers, you always want to kind of block out that noise, but now that noise is kind of blocked out already. So that almost makes it a little easier because, yeah, you don't really have to block out that. But I will say there were a couple, like, extra points where before I really lock into my process and I'm trying to, like, block out and think about my process, you know, you could hear the opposite linebacker across from you. You could hear his voice loud and clear. Whereas usually you kind of have a murmur in the crowd or they're cheering loud and you can't hear a thing. But you could hear, you know, those guys, Tahir Whitehead was over across from us and I could hear him distinctly talking to his guys. And I thought that was pretty funny later on because, yeah, you typically wouldn't ever have that ability. Even if you're at a home stadium that's kind of quiet, there's always that murmur and, you know, there's always some background noise going on.
It kind of reminds me, Daniel, I was talking to my buddies over the weekend because we were talking obviously about the lack of fans everywhere. And I was like, it kind of reminds me of, like, you know, when you were in high school and you're watching like a basketball game and someone shoots and somebody go, brick, you know, stuff like that for like a free throw. Like are guys like yelling at you, like trying to get into your head?
Yeah, I really didn't. Like I said, once I get in my zone, I don't think I would notice it. But I think that's exactly what it's like. I mean, you can hear it. Guys from the sidelines yelling during the game, you can hear the hits a lot more clearly. You know, there's so many different things that usually with that crowd noise, it's kind of, you know, everything's amplified on the field a little bit. So it's unique, it's fun, but I mean, obviously we miss the crowd, especially this weekend or Monday. We'll miss having the Raiders with us, you know, the fans and stuff. So, but you know, we got to adjust, overcome, and use it to our advantage.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously, you know, no issues for you, fans or no fans on Sunday. And I just want to talk about that 54-yarder. That dude, you absolutely hammered, bro. Was that good from 60? Do you think it looked? I mean, from the TV, I think you could have done it.
Yeah. So I mean, obviously, we kind of before the game that side, the wind was kind of in the face, so we kind of had it figured out. All right, 53 and in, we for sure want to hit those. But kind of outside of that, that was kind of the cutoff. And so it was going to be either a 54 or 55-yard field goal into the wind. And so that's why we kind of had a discussion, think it over, give coach time to think over, you know, how aggressive he wanted to be. And he kind of asked me, hey, you ready to hit this? And I was like, yeah, let's try it. And so we ran out there, and I knew I had to drive it just a little bit with the wind. I didn't want to get it up in the wind and let the wind play it, but hit it pretty beautifully. And I think, yeah, it might've had quite a few extra yards on it.
Dude. And look, man, that was probably like, I don't even know if this is the right word for it. I think that was the swaggiest kick I've ever seen you kick, because you hammer it. You walk into it too. Like, it reminded me like Tiger Woods when he's eyeing the putt down. You know what I mean? Like, you just followed that thing right into the, yeah, man.
I love it. Yeah. And I mean, it was exciting. You know, we haven't played a game. We haven't been in front of a crowd. We haven't had a big time kick or anything like that in a long time. So, you know, that was my first real field goal. You know, I had a short one before that, some extra points, but that was the first, you know, real field goal that, you know, especially a 54 yarder, you know, that helps the team a lot. And obviously with a close game, kind of how it ended, you know, those 3 points can make or break the game sometimes. So I was fired up to, you know, finally have the opportunity again to be out there and then to take advantage of that and help the team out with that.
And we got the fist bump too, man. We don't see the Carlson fist pump very often.
Even.
It was a lot of fun to watch. But obviously, Daniel, like you said, you know, Sunday was great. It was an incredible win for the team, for the organization, all that. But now on to week two, on to Drew Brees and the Saints. And you're kind of in a very interesting position where you're obviously kicking in a brand new stadium. You've had a few chances to be in there, obviously, with the scrimmages and the practice at Allegiant. But how different of an environment is it for you literally kicking in a stadium where you don't have much to go off of in terms of how the wind plays and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously so much different than Oakland. You know, we're early season, we're playing on the dirt in Oakland. There's always that wind from the Bay Area and stuff. And so there was a lot of stuff that we worked on to kind of get acclimated to that. But here, you know, we're playing in an indoor controlled environment. It's going to have some nice grass on there. I mean, it's one of the most beautiful stadiums I've ever seen for sure. And so I'm excited for the opportunity to be able to play there every weekend at home and stuff. And obviously for a Monday night venue and our first game in Las Vegas, just a awesome opportunity for me and for the rest of the team to kind of, you know, hopefully get a big win here on Monday night.
Just wrapping it up with Daniel Carlson. And Daniel, I got to ask you, man, the new number is perfect so far. If you're looking good, you look good in number two, by the way. So how did you decide on the new number? I know that Marcus Mariota obviously approached you about getting number eight. We talked about that this offseason, but why number two?
I just thought two was an awesome number. You know, obviously Marcus, we talked about it. I knew number eight means a lot to him. And so being the team player, I like number eight, but I didn't have any strong ties to it, I guess. So number two is a great, and one of my favorite with my faith background is I am second. And so kind of the idea that, you know, my faith is first and I'm second, as you know, important as God and what I'm believing, that's more important than what I'm doing selfishly. And so that was what it meant to me. I mean, kind of why I chose it from what was available.
And if I'm not mistaken as well, are the wristbands new this year?
They're new. So we wear those trackers. I have mine in my pocket right now, but we wear those trackers during practice. So I was like, if I'm going to wear a wristband during practice, might as well just have a little swag out there in the game.
Dude, I like this new Daniel Carlson, man. Like it. New number, new wristbands, crushing 54-yarders, emotion-filled. Dude, I love it. I'm all for Vegas Daniel Carlson. Well, Daniel, dude, thank you so much for carving out a little bit of time for us, man. This is a lot of fun. It's good to see you again. I know you were talking that it's so weird not having the same type of season as we normally would, but it was great to catch up, and we appreciate you a lot, man.
Appreciate it, Eddie. Have a good one.
And a big shout out to Daniel Carlson, man. Just like I said, one of our favorite dudes and a guy who's walking a little taller in the desert, and I like it a lot. So before we get to victory formation, let's just take a quick minute to hear from our friends over at Allegiant.
Touchdown, Las Vegas.
Since starting Allegiant some 20 years ago, we've flown more than 100 million people to be with those they love. We're pilots, flight attendants, and technicians, but we're also parents, spouses, and neighbors. And just like you, we're excited to reconnect with the people and places that matter most. That's why we're going the distance for health and safety on the ground and in the air, because the further we go now, the safer it'll be to go farther tomorrow. Allegiant, the official airline of the Las Vegas Raiders. Low fares, nonstop flights, only at Allegiant.com.
And it's about that time to wrap up the show in the way that we always do, the way that we love to do. It's victory formation. Eddie Pascal, engineer Jim, somewhere in the digital ether out there. I'm not entirely sure where he is, to be honest with you, but I promise you he is there. And also there, and a little more vocal than Engineer Jim, is our very own Kyle Cannon Booby Cartwright Martin. KMM, top of the morning to you, big fella. How you doing?
I'm feeling energized after last night, Eddie. I'm feeling full of life today. Nothing can bring me down. I'm ready to talk some football.
And we are going to get into last night. So for those of you who listen to this show, know that we record on Wednesday, and there was a big happening in KMM's world on Tuesday night. But before we dive into all that and recap week one and look ahead to week two and all that good stuff, we talked about at the top, Kyle, the Flow Daddy, Tom Flores, back in the booth on Monday night. Big, important news really for anyone in the Raider Nation. Obviously, Coach is one of the most beloved figures we have in the mix right now. And you actually had a chance to talk to Coach, was it last week, I want to say? And I'm kind of just curious, for those of you who haven't done it, check out Kyle's piece on Raiders.com, hashtag shameless plug alert. But how is Coach doing? How is he? Where is his head at right now? And I can't imagine that he is anything besides fired up to get back to work on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, he told me that when he gets in the booth on Monday against the Saints for the first game at Allegiant Stadium, he's going to feel like a kid again. I mean, when Mark Bedain, the president of the Raiders, and of course Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders, reached out to Coach Flores, I mean, he was excited because he wanted to approach them just about attending the first game, not even being a part of it. He just wanted to be there, and he understood that with everything going on with COVID and, you know, all the limitations that teams have, and he just wanted to be there. But he didn't expect to receive the kind of invite to come host the first game on the radio broadcast, which is something that means the world to him, because I can't imagine being a part of a relationship, you know, an organization, being a part of something for 60 years. I mean, remember that. Coach Flores has been a part of this Raiders organization for 60 years. So he bleeds silver and black, and it's the one thing that he cares about most in this world. I mean, of course, he probably loves his wife, but you get what I'm saying.
No, I get you.
He's going to relish the opportunity to, you know, bridge the gap between fan and team. I mean, he told me verbatim that he's so excited to get back in the huddle. And I thought that was really cool to hear him say, because, you know, at every point of his career, he's transitioned into something new with the Raiders, but it's always been about staying mentally like he's in the huddle. You know, as a quarterback, it's his job to prepare and be in the huddle and communicate those play calls. As a coach, it's his job to put his mind into the head of the quarterback and imagine what he can get, you know, Jim Plunkett to do or whoever, right? And then now, you know, he did broadcast for 21 years. So during those 21 years, he was in the mentality of the team, the coach, trying to figure out what play calls were coming, why they ran these certain plays, communicating that, not to the team anymore, but to the fan base. And now he's going to rejoin that broadcast crew, and he's over the moon about it. And it was so cool to hear him talk about. It's definitely one of the cooler interviews I've done, and I'm excited to hear him on Monday night.
Yeah, and absolutely. And you know, I think you brought up a lot of great things, and Coach is just such a part, an integral part of this organization. And you said it perfectly, where he's been a player, he's been a coach, he's been in the radio broadcast, but through it all, through all these changes, through all the different variations of what his role has been, it's always been about the Raiders. And for Coach Flores, it will always be about the Raiders. And you know how I feel about Coach. I've been pretty vocal about the fact that it's an absolute disgrace that he's not in the Hall of Fame. I don't need to get all fired up on a Wednesday morning and rehash all that. But, you know, he's such a kind soul too, Kyle. Like, he's just such a good person and the epitome of the we, not me kind of fella. And it is really cool that he's going to be back in the booth for this first game, something that he'll be able to tell his grandkids about, something that will live in history, that he was part of that first broadcast. And it's really exciting. And so, yeah, I encourage all of you, obviously, to watch the game on Monday night, but do what I do during the game and listen to the radio broadcast while you watch the TV feed. It's an incredible experience. It's a different experience. And I can't wait to hear Coach back on the ones and twos, and that'll be really cool. But KMM, before we get into Monday night in its entirety and look back to Sunday just a little bit, I gotta tee you up, big fella. I know I said a few minutes ago that Tuesday last night was a huge night for you. As our resident Lakers analyst, resident Lakers everything. And the Los Angeles Clippers humiliated themselves once again, blowing yet another 3-1 lead. And really, KMM, there's not much that I can add, so I just want to cede the floor to you for you to kind of get what you need to get off of your chest.
Oh, Eddie, I appreciate this more than you know. Well, I'm sure you know, but yeah, the Clippers choked in true Clipper fashion yet again. Not a surprise to us who've watched the Clippers blunder their way through year after year. But Tuesday night was more than just a special moment for Lakers fans, Eddie. It was a special moment for NBA Twitter. I don't know if I've ever seen anything like NBA Twitter was on Tuesday night. The slander, the roasts of all things Clippers, my least favorite franchise of any sport, was magical. All year throughout LA, you could drive around and see billboards that Steve Ballmer put up. He threw tons of money at, taking shots at the Lakers, saying things like "streetlights over spotlights," "wings not rings," "snarl over style," "we not me." Guess what, Eddie? They're going home, and none of that even matters because the Clippers blew a 3-1 lead and choked away their chance to play the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. The Clippers have never made a Western Conference Finals, and they had the best chance they've ever had, and they blew it for the second time in 5 years. Doc Rivers has blown three 3-1 leads as a head coach in his career, and this is his second with the Clippers. I'm at a good place spiritually right now.
And really, that's all that matters. In these trying times, KMM, if we can all just be at a good place spiritually, isn't that the end goal, really, just to be okay and make it through another Wednesday?
Oh, yeah, man. This is going to fuel me for a long time.
Well, I'm glad. I hope it carries you through Monday night and through the rest of the regular season. And let's transition back into football. I just wanted to give you your moment in the spotlight, so congratulations. Looking back at week one, KMM, I'm kind of just curious for your thoughts, since we haven't had a chance to talk, I should say, on the record since the match ended. But any surprises for you? Anything? What did you like? What did you didn't like? Kind of just top-end KMM thoughts before we move ahead to the Saints.
I mean, giving up 30 points, what, you know, that's not something I like to see, but I understand that there's a lot of new pieces and a new defense, and so it's going to take some time for the guys in Coach Gunther's system to gel. But I think on the positive side, the thing that surprised me is that Jonathan Abram racked up a game-high 13 tackles, first game back from injury. You know, a lot of people are viewing this as Jonathan's rookie year since he missed all of last season with that shoulder injury. So I think that was the biggest surprise to me. I figured he'd ease his way in. But I guess that's not Jonathan Abram, and that's not who he is. He's always flying around like a bat out of hell, and he's going to play with speed and aggression. And he definitely did that on Sunday, you know, cracked a few people, hit Christian McCaffrey pretty hard on one play. I think that's my biggest takeaway. Obviously, Josh Jacobs had 3 touchdowns, but that's something we're used to this with this guy now. I mean, he's going to be the feature back, and we all know how talented Josh is. So I was pleasantly surprised to see Jonathan Abram come out in the way that he did.
Yeah, it felt like, in a lot of ways, it felt like Jonathan kind of just reintroduced himself a little bit, because the last time we saw him play meaningful football was a year ago, which a year ago now seems like it was 35 years ago. You know what I mean? I had no gray hairs. I was a youthful man. I could still go out and drink all night with my friends. Obviously can't do that anymore. But it felt like he really did say, "Hey, remember me? I'm still here. I'm still the same guy that I was a year ago. I'm just healthy now." And like you said, dude, he was flying around, team high and game high 13 tackles. A guy who was everywhere. And when I went back and I watched the game on Monday morning, he jumps off. And I think that the beauty of Abram is that he is so explosive. He is so fast. He can be so violent, but it really felt like he was doing all of that on Sunday for week one in a controlled, contained way. Like, he wasn't doing it with, you know, kind of reckless abandon. There was a purpose to everything he was doing. There was a tone-setting nature to everything that he did. And, man, it was a blast to see him out there and go to work. And you just got to feel happy for him too, man. A guy who plays one half last year, whose season ends after 30 minutes or so, whatever. I don't remember exactly when it ended. But you get the point. And now he goes wire to wire in that first game, sets the tone back there defensively for what Paul Gunther wants to do. And you're right, 30 points is too much. The defense has got to get better, but it will, especially if you got to have a guy like John Abram leading the way. But I'm curious, KMM, I had a tweet about Abram the other day, and I got a bunch of unsolicited nickname suggestions, I should say, from the fans. And these are the three most popular ones, and I'm wondering if you have anything a little bit better, because in the spirit of full transparency, don't love any of these three. But the three that were the most popular are the following for Abram: the missile, the hitman, and the tank. You like any of those or no?
The hitman I like the best. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not like in love with any of them.
They feel like nicknames from like the early to mid 90s. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm the hitman.
Yeah.
Chill out.
The hitman makes the most sense, but it just seems too easy. Like, I don't know. I don't like the cleat seeking missile. I feel like if anyone should be that, it should be Cleland, just because cleat. I don't know. I feel like it's just got to happen organically. Like
it does.
Even with the Hunter Renfrow nicknames, like Third and Renfrow is going to be his nickname forever, right? I mean, regardless, because the slot machine makes sense, but it's almost because it makes too much sense. Like it feels forced. Like it doesn't happen naturally. Third and Renfrow, it's catchy and people are going to use it forever. So I don't know. Jonathan Abram, he's going to have one play that's going to define, you know, his nickname, and that'll be what people roll with. But I think the hitman's a good start. But I don't want it to stick.
Dude, the hitman seems like the bully in like one of those early 2000s, like high school movies. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like you're the nerd who's, oh, I just started at a new school. And then everyone whispers, oh, here comes the hitman. You know, like when the kid goes to like PE or whatever. Oh, no, yeah. Not the hitman.
But I also imagine the hitman could be like an old 80s wrestler with a duster and these
Brett the Hitman Hart, right? Yeah, shout out to Mark. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know. It feels kind of corny.
I know. It's a good start. It's a good start, I think. But I think Raider Nation can do a little bit better. And I'm sure, much like the defense, they will improve between now and week 17. But KMM, week one in the books. Obviously, we feel great. Enjoyed a victory Monday for the first time in a while. That was beautiful, refreshing, spiritually fulfilling, as you would say. But now we had to put it all behind us. Drew Brees is coming to town, Monday Night Football, and there's so much to get to. But when you look at this game, I think at least on paper, the two things that you're going to have to worry about: Drew Brees, future Hall of Famer, he's going to throw her. Hopefully he does not, but he's a guy that can go out there and just throw for 500 yards in the blink of an eye. But when we're looking at the Raiders offense, I think the biggest question heading into week two now, and let's be honest, they kicked some ass on Sunday afternoon. Josh was incredible. Derek was efficient as always. That offensive line was big, bruising, and dominating at the line of scrimmage. But in terms of that O-line, big number 77, the greatest underdog, Trent Brown, do you think we get him on Monday night? And if we don't get him, how concerned are you, 1 to 10, for TGU?
I mean, NFL Network's Ian Rappaport has made it seem like there's a good possibility he plays on Monday. But I don't know. I mean, I would be a little worried just because if he doesn't play, because the Panthers front seven is very different from the Saints front seven. I mean, you've got Marcus Davenport on that Saints defense. You've got Cameron Hayward. You've got Cam Jordan. They're loaded. They've got a great defense. And then on the outside, you've got Marshawn Lattimore. This is not the Panthers defense that the Raiders are facing. So while the rest of the offensive line can certainly hold their own, right tackle is a position that Derek needs to have shored up. So,
and Josh as well.
Yeah, exactly. Trent Brown is just a difference maker. And when he's in the ball game, it's noticeable. So I think if he doesn't play, that's pretty worrisome. But last week, Denzel Good, has our social media manager Matt Walks pointed out, he should be called Denzel Great for the performance that he put out being a guard.
Walks should also put a dollar in the jar for that terrible joke, but I digress.
he should. But Denzel Good played really well. I just don't know if that's someone that you can put at right tackle long term. So I don't know what the status on Sam Young is, if he's going to be able to go. I'm sure Brandon Parker will be listed as active considering the lack of depth at that position right now. So it's a little nerve-wracking, but I think there's other things that John Gruden can do to navigate around that situation.
Yeah, I mean, it is certainly a nervy situation. Like, if you care about this team, if you're locked into this team, and your starting right tackle, who is a legitimate all-pro when he's healthy, is perhaps not going to be able to go against a really good defensive front, yeah, that is concerning. And like you said, dude, I mean, TGU is a difference maker. There are a handful of tackles, I think, in the NFL who kind of just do what he do and can do what he can do when he's healthy. But look, I mean, if he's unable to go, he's unable to go. Like, you can't make a guy magically healthy. Like, you just, there's no way to do it. But I think that I do have a lot of solace in the fact that when I think back to Sunday, and you are 100% right, Kyle, where the Panthers front and the Saints front are two very different animals. But I do feel good about the fact that even without Trent for 95% of that game, I mean, that offensive line held up in a big way. When you were down to your third tackle, the Denzel Good, you know, when you're down to Denzel Good, I mean, listen, he didn't play any right tackle throughout training camp. He was thrown in there in the heat of the battle, and he held his own. And like you said, I'm not sure if he's your long-term answer for if this team really wants to make noise in the postseason. But I mean, for a week or two, if Trent needs to get healthy, I mean, yeah, I feel pretty good about Denzel, but I don't know. I mean, we knew headed into 2020 that the strength of this team would be the offensive line. And a huge part of that, no pun intended, is Trent Brown. And obviously we want him to go. We want him to be 100%. We want him to be healthy, or as close to 100% as anyone is during an NFL regular season. But I might be a little less nervous than you headed into week two, just in terms of that aspect of the game. Now, there are things that I am certainly worried about headed into Monday Night Football, namely Breeze, Drew. But I guess we did get a little bit of good news, and good news is a relative term, obviously, because we don't want anyone to be hurt. But it sounds like we got no Michael Thomas this Monday Night KMM.
Yeah, I mean, the best wide receiver in the league is going to miss our game. That's huge. I mean, the Saints went out and added a few more pieces this offseason. They got Emmanuel Sanders. Even at 33 years old, the guy's still lightning fast, and he's capable of being a playmaker down the field. So that's something Paul Gunther and his team are going to have to be aware of. But Alvin Kamara is going to garner a lot of attention. If the Raiders can stack the box, take away their most dynamic playmaker, Thomas aside, you're going to narrow it down to Drew Brees having to make plays with Jared Cook and Emmanuel Sanders. So Alvin Kamara stopping him, that's got to be the focal point, because I'm sure they're going to feed him plenty and find ways to get him involved in the passing game like they always do, but especially now more than ever with Thomas out. So they can still hurt the Raiders. I mean, they definitely have capable talent. We both know how good Jared Cook is. I mean, he's no one to scoff at either. I mean, he produced at a high level when he was with the Raiders, and he's still finding ways to get the job done with Drew Brees. So this is going to be a good game on Monday night. There's no question about it, but yes, obviously hope Michael Thomas has a swift recovery, but not mad at the fact that he's going to be unable to go on Monday Night Football.
You have to think, Kyle, that the fact that Paul Gunther's defense got a chance to go at Christian McCaffrey last week, and now they get Kamara this week. I mean, I don't know if you're going to get a better warm-up for Alvin Kamara than Christian McCaffrey, right? I know that they're not entirely the same kind of beast, but, I mean, they have a lot of crossover in terms of their skill set.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, McCaffrey still had 96 yards on 23 carries and two touchdowns, but for what he's capable of and what Kamara is capable of, they're home run hitters. You know, they can go off and finish a game with 250 scrimmage yards, no problem, without batting an eye. So I think that's an excellent point that the Raiders were able to get their feet wet with Christian McCaffrey. I guess dive straight into the deep end with Christian McCaffrey, because he's that kind of player. And so scheming towards Alvin Kamara will definitely get everyone in that mindset based on what they experienced the week prior. I think that's an excellent point.
I mean, you know I'm a big Kamara guy. You know that. I mean, when I was doing my evaluation a couple of years ago, I told you, I said, this this guy is going to be a beast. But he does remind us of McCaffrey a lot for obvious reasons. He's a guy that is going to get his. Like, I think everyone going into Monday night knows that Alvin Kamara is going to get his. It's just a matter of limiting how much he eats. And I mean, if you could, let me ask you this. If the rate, so we, McCaffrey was at what, 90, 93 yards on Sunday? Was that the number you said, Kyle?
He was at 96 rushing yards and he added 38 receiving yards.
So that puts him at just about 133, right? 130 yards, let's call it, total yards.
Yeah, in that ballpark.
If we keep Kamara to 130, how do you feel about our chances on Monday night?
I think those chances are excellent. I think the biggest thing, though, is how many times can you keep him out of the end zone? If Kamara has 130 total scrimmage yards, I mean, that's a good day at the office for anybody,
yeah,
right?
Certainly, but, yeah.
But especially for him and someone of his capability, I think that's, I think anyone would take that. I think Gunther would be pleased. And yeah, if he has 130 total scrimmage yards, that means that Drew Brees has been forced to do something, right? He's been forced to sling the ball, which he's capable of. But now in his older age, is that something that he can do at a high level? And without his best target, I don't know. So I think the Raiders are going to luck out with no Michael Thomas, but they still have their hands full.
Yeah, absolutely. And Brees just seems like one of those guys, man, where it's like, you know, I was just reading a bunch of stuff following the Saints win last week, and their fans are like angry. You know what I mean? Like, they won the game, but they're not even like happy. And so Drew Brees seems like the kind of guy who like hears that. He's like, all right, we're going to go on the road. We're going to go play in a primetime game. Everyone's going to be watching. Like, it seems like these are the moments that you do get, like, that Drew Brees 450 yards, no interceptions, 4 tutty type of games.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a tough boy.
And it'll be an exciting game, though. I mean, like, it really will be. You know, you look at the storylines, you look at, oh, like you said, no Michael Thomas. Oh, how is this young secondary going to respond to Drew Brees? Can our defensive line get going? Josh v. Kamara, Derek v. Drew. I mean, there are no shortage of, oh, and not even to mention, it's the first game at Allegiant Stadium. Like, there are no shortage of intriguing aspects to this game. And we're going to talk a lot about them in the next couple of days. But KMM, it's about that time. Monday is going to be very exciting. High energy, high emotion. But there is going to be a couple games this weekend that have none of that. Zilch. Zero. So for week 2, KMM, what's the boring game of the week slate looking like?
Oh, man. I've got two options for you, Eddie. And I'm going to, you know, I want to talk them through with you a little bit. So last week was Jets, Bills, and boy, that was a stinker. That was a true stinker. The Jets look bad. So, you know, since we went them last week, we'll leave them out of the frying pan this week. But I'm going to target the Thursday night matchup with the Cincinnati Bengals and sweet Joe Burrow visiting the Cleveland Browns. That's it's a division matchup, but on Thursday night football, that doesn't really intrigue me. Last week, those two teams had a combined 19 points.
Oh, God.
Yeah, not great. I can't imagine that we're going to see a big offensive output, which is remarkable considering the amount of weapons that the Browns have. You know, Baker, they've got Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, Odell Beckham Jr., David Njoku, Austin Hooper, Jarvis Landry. They've got talent, but they can't put it together for whatever reason. And division opponents, as you know, I mean, they're never really high-scoring games because each team knows each other so well. But that's option one.
Thursday night games are typically just trash football too. You know, it's not like Thursday night is this crown jewel of the best that football has to offer.
Exactly. It's always kind of a ugly slugfest. So option one, not great. Option two features a pair of 1-0 teams, but don't let that deceive you, Eddie. It's going to be the Washington football team versus the Arizona Cardinals, who are coming off an impressive win over the San Francisco 49ers. Don't get me wrong, DeAndre Hopkins with a career-high receptions with 14. But not great. I don't really want to see Dwayne Haskins and Kyler Murray go toe-to-toe. And that's not even on prime time.
Where is that game, KMM? What's the locale?
That game is being played in Glendale, Arizona. And let me tell you, the over-under is at 47.5, which isn't bad. Not bad. The Bengals-Browns over-under is at 43.5. So, as you know, as I said, it's not going to be a high-scoring affair. But either way, not intrigued by either.
You know what? Oh, boy. Two terrible games. Two objectively terrible games. But I am going to go, if you're okay with me casting a vote, Kyle. I know please, this is your please, I know this yeah. I know this is your bit, so I don't want to step on your toes.
But no.
I'm going to cast my vote for the Thursday night game because one, I don't even is that televised? Are they throwing that on TV?
Yeah, it is. It is televised on NFL Network.
I don't even know if I get NFL Network. But dude, there's certainly some intrigue there, and I'm a big Joe Burrow guy. I think Joe Burrow is going to be a beast, but dude, on a short week, him versus Baker, that's a respectful pass. And we're going to have playoff basketball on Thursday night, are we not?
Yeah, we'll have another Eastern Conference Finals game with the Heat and Celtics. So go Heat.
Yeah, I would much rather watch bubble basketball than Baker Mayfield and Joe Burrow slug it out for a 10-7 clash of the Titans.
Real quick, since you brought up bubble basketball, do you think, just because this popped in my head, even though it's in the bubble, are you looking at the games at the same competitive level as it would be in a regular season? I feel like, honestly, it would be harder and the bubble wins mean more because America has had a hard enough time staying in quarantine in their own homes for a month and a half. Imagine living in Orlando in a hotel room for 3 months without anything to do. You can't leave. Your mental toughness is being put to the test.
Are you asking just about how, like, the quality of basketball, the competition of the games? Like,
I guess I am. I guess I'm curious too. I mean, I've seen a lot of Clippers fans try to make the excuse that, oh, it was in the bubble. But like, you were up 3-1. That wasn't an issue.
I don't buy any of that, dude. I think by and large, the basketball has been incredibly entertaining. I think it's been good basketball. I think obviously when you think back to the first couple days or week or so of the bubble, like, yeah, it was kind of sloppy. But these dudes were coming out of quarantine just like everyone else. Like if me and you went out to play in the NBA right now, it would be a bloodbath. It'd be terrible. But no, man, I've been really pleasantly surprised by just the quality of play in the bubble. I think the games have been, obviously super intense, especially as we get later and later into the postseason. I think the product on TV is actually a lot better than I thought it was going to be. I don't really mind the fact that there's no fans. Obviously, I wish there were fans there, but it's not a deal breaker at all for me. And you just look at these games, dude. You look at how competitive they've been, how many of these games have come down to overtime or one possession in the last 10 seconds. And, dude, I have nothing but love, gratitude, and respect to Adam Silver and those guys for getting this off the ground and making it happen. And by and large, dude, I've been very, very pleased. And I'm not going to be one of those guys that puts an asterisk next to whoever wins this championship. Because like you said, dude, these guys have been grinding. They've been locked down for, what, we're north of 3 months now for some of them. And dude, it's hard. It's going to be a hard championship to win regardless under the best of circumstances. And I think that everything that these dudes are going through right now just makes it even harder.
Yeah, I agree. Well said, man. Thank you for letting me get that question.
Of course. You know, this is a collaboration, Kyle. It's always smooth jazz. We're just very shout out fluidity. That's the name of the game on this pod. But before we crack a few ice cold Coors Lights, KMM, and get on out of here, we brought it back last week. Time to bring it back for week two. The Raiders will win on Monday Night Football in the brand new Allegiant Stadium if...
I'm going to take yours from last week because I think it's applicable to this week. If you can keep the ball out of Alvin Kamara's hands. Last week you said the Raiders will win if they can manage the clock and keep the ball out of Christian McCaffrey's hands, milk the clock a little bit. I think the same will go this week with no Michael Thomas. I think if you're able to eliminate their best playmaker and Alvin Kamara, the Raiders are going to finish on the positive side.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, you well said. I think you hit the nail on the head with that one. I'm going to say the Raiders are going to win Monday night if our defensive line can just ratchet up the intensity just a bit and get some sustained pressure on Drew Brees. Now, I'm not saying that they need to have 9 sacks or 7 sacks or anything outlandish, but I think there were large parts of Sunday's game where you just felt like Bridgewater had all the time that he wanted in the pocket. And Drew Brees is a future Hall of Famer, probably one of the best 5 or so quarterbacks to ever play the game. And if you give him that kind of time on Monday night on primetime, he has the ability to slice and dice you up. He just does. So if this defensive line of Max Crosby and Klee and Carl Nassib and Big Mo Hurst can get after Drew Brees, if they can make him uncomfortable, and whether that results in just getting in his face, knocking him to the ground, obviously sacks and turnovers would be the optimum choice there. But if we can just get a little sustained pressure on him, make him uncomfortable for 60 minutes, you know, there it's a long trip for them. It's, you know, the Raiders are feeling good. I'm not concerned about the Silver and Black putting up points on Monday night. I'm really not. And I know it was just 1 week last week, but we saw the formula and we saw it last year for how this team is going to win football games. So I'm not too concerned about going toe-to-toe with the Saints, but I would like to see Drew Brees under duress a little more than Teddy Bridgewater was a week ago.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, looking back, you know, obviously giving up 30 points isn't ideal, but I think the pass rush is another area that I think we all collectively could look at and be like, all right, that's got to improve too. So I think that's an excellent point. And I think if the Raiders are able to do that, I definitely think that the Saints offense will suffer if they can keep the ball out of Kamara's hands. And if they can get after Drew Brees, that would be fantastic.
Go get him, dude. Go get him. Pin those ears back and take him down. Get Drew Brees a little dirty, man. I love Drew Brees, but let's make his life miserable for one evening, shall we? So, okay, man, let's get out of here. It's about that time. Let's crack a few ice cold Coors Lights before we continue on with the rest of our day. Do you want to go first? Or you want me to?
You can go first.
Okay, I am going to crack a cold one for all of the mental health professionals out there. I've seen a lot of tweets and things on social media the past week or so about I'm trying to figure out the right word, like scientific studies. I guess that's kind of redundant, but just studies saying that because of the point we are in this kind of COVID new reality for us, there's a lot of people out there who are just really down in the dumps, who are having a hard time, you know, because the newness of it is over. There's not really a clear end date for it. And they were saying that there's a lot of people out there who are having a really hard time. So a big shout out to all of our mental health folks out there, our mental health professionals, I should say, who are helping people get through this incredibly challenging time. And yeah, man, this ice cold Coors Light's for them. I don't know if most mental health professionals would prescribe drinking alcohol as a remedy, but, you know, crack one for them, KMM.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent one. It's going to be a lot better than mine. I was just simply going to crack one for myself. And
Oh, my God.
In enjoyment of the Clippers' loss on Tuesday night. I mean, that's something I'll drink to anytime. And I just wanted to get one more dig in before we wrapped it up. But you know, mental health professionals, that's definitely worthy.
How many times have you cracked cold ones for yourself on this show? This is like the third or the fourth time that you've done it.
It always has to do with a team losing of sick enjoyment for me.
That's all right. That's why we love you. You're a sick man. You're not well, but none of us are. So on that note, we are going to depart and we will see you guys, for Monday Night Football. That's crazy, dude. It still blows my mind a little bit, KMM, that we're actually in the heart, the belly of the beast of the NFL regular season. As I told you, man, there was a part of me that truthfully never thought we would get here. But here we are, here we stay, and let's take down the Saints on Monday night. So for Eddie Pascal, gosh, that's not my name. For Eddie Pascal, Engineer Jim, the great KMM, our guest this week, Daniel Carlson, and everyone else who gets our little program from A to Z, we thank you deeply, humbly, and oh so sincerely. And as I said, my weekly reminder, here it comes. Wash your hands, stay at home, wear your mask, do all the stuff that you got to do so we can stay safe and stay healthy and return to normal at some point in the near future, because good God, we all need it. So until Monday night, Raider Nation, we will see you guys then, and enjoy the weekend. Watch a little football on Sunday for us, huh? How about that? And we'll catch you guys Monday night for another episode of Upon Further Review.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Upon Further Review, presented by Coors Light on the official Raiders Podcast Network.